Please don't get me wrong, I wanna keep it moving. I know what that requires. I'm not foolish. Please can you make this work for me? Cause I'm not a puppet, I will work against your strings. When I go home, I tend to close the door. I never want to know. So sing with me, can't you see? I don't have.
Was Sam Smith, and we just want to say a big thank you to our whole team here and to St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. And Rebecca, it's been a pleasure, as always, darling.
Such a pleasure. Absolutely loved doing the show with you. I genuinely look forward to it. I couldn't sleep last night with excitement, and it's continuing until Friday. Keep tuning in, keep getting your tweets into at Walk in My Shoes. Thank you, Cathy O'Connor, stylist extraordinaire. Thank you, Derek Daniels, for sharing your story. Derek, of course, from Assets. John Belton from Number 17, personal training. We'd Orla Walsh, the dietitian. We'd Dr. Shari McDade,
Katie Richardson.
We had a fantastic group of guests on today, and we're trying to kind of eat into Shea Burns' time because we know people don't really want to listen to him.
Okay.
A lot of people have texted in going, you know, stay on air for 2 hours, but he's coming in to kick us out.
But Shea's also wearing his beautiful blue jacket that he got in America.
Brings
so you're
going
to have to tweet
eyes.
A picture of that, Shea. He's fabulous.
Guys, enjoy the rest of the week.
Bye-bye.
So I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I have. I know it'll kill me when it's over. I don't wanna think about it. I want you to love me now. I don't know who's gonna kiss you when I'm gone. So I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I have. I know it'll kill me when it's over. I don't wanna think about it. I want you to love me now. Turn evil to good, even when we try so hard. kiss you when I'm gone. Oh, I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I. Who's gonna kiss you when I'm gone? Oh, I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I have. And I know it'll kill me when it's over. I don't wanna think about it. I want you to love me now. I don't know who's gonna kiss you when I'm gone. So I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I have. I know it'll kill me when it's over. I don't wanna think about it. I want you to love me now. I don't know who's gonna kiss you when I'm gone. So I'm gonna love you now, like it's all I have. And I know it'll kill me when it's over. I don't wanna think about it. I just wanna love you now.
Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Cheers. Florence and the Machine. I love Florence and the Machine. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Shea Byrne broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services from the lobby. And the lobby is filled with people this morning. I have no idea what they're all doing sitting there, but it's absolutely filled with young people this morning. So hello, young people. How are you? Nice to see you. They're all afraid to wave back. But it's okay. You won't be heard in the glass bowl this morning. So hello, young people. How are you? Nice to see you. They're all afraid to step can make a huge difference. You can tune into Walk In My Shoes Radio on FM radio by turning the dial to 105.2 if you're listening online or elsewhere. But of course, if you're not and you're on FM and you want to listen online, walkinmyshoes.ie, and that'll give you details of all the lineup as well. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Walk In My Shoes using the hashtag WIMSFM. That's Walk In My Shoes FM. We're here to mark World Mental Health Week, and we've been here since Monday broadcasting. All sorts of radio personalities and people from the world of mental health as well have been on over the last few days, and lots of traffic coming in, emails and texts and calls asking us various questions. So you're welcome to contact us as well on the Twitter handle or send a carrier pigeon or whatever you need to do. We'd be delighted to hear from you, and even if you have a request for music, we can do our best to put that up for you as well. So coming up on my program this morning, this is Shea Byrne. We're here until 11 o'clock. Social farming, a novel social service. Brian Smith is going to be on the phone to explain. Imelda McHugh talks about addiction and its effect on families and how they're dealing with it here at St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. RT newscaster and friend Eileen Dunn joins us here to review the papers. Looking forward to a chat with her. And security analyst, journalist and former captain in the Irish Army, Tom Clonan. How in the theatre production Soldier Still, you get to meet the other you, the one that kills. Sounds intriguing. We'll talk to Tom a little bit later on in the programme. As I say, we're going to be talking about social farming. Brian Smith's going to be on the phone with us. We're going to take a track from Duffy. This is called Mercy.
Hit the beat and take it to the verse now.
Duffy, looking for mercy this morning on Walking My Shoes FM. It's 16 minutes past 9 o'clock here, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Service on Stephen's Lane, just near Houston Station, between the Guinness Brewery and Houston Station. There's a laneway where the Lewis goes down. And we're just in there, literally, as the world goes by the window here, as people are coming and people are being coming for stays, people are coming for courses, people are coming to work, people are delivering stuff. They're all passing by the window as well. All life is here this morning. Now, our first item on the programme this morning, we're going to talk about a social farming initiative. Now, you may say, what is social farming? I have no idea. I'm going to talk to a man who knows all about it. His name is Brian Smith. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Shane.
How are you this morning?
Not too bad, no.
You're at the Leitrim Development and Social Inclusion. You're the project manager for social farming. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. We have a national initiative funded and supported by the Commission for the Economic Development of Rural Areas in the Department of Agriculture.
It's a very, very formal title, but let's see. Whereabouts are you? You're up in Leitrim at the moment. Are you speaking from lovely Leitrim?
Absolutely, excuse me.
And is it lovely there?
Absolutely, Drumshambo, yeah. We're based in Drumshambo, and we, the centre of lovely Leitrim.
The centre, and that's Charlie McGettigan country, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. Charlie lives here.
Have you listened out for the sound of a guitar in the background? How did you get involved in this? I know you've been involved in different projects over the years as well, but this was an initiative that came from UCD and Queen's University in Belfast as well.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of people engaging with nature and with the environment, and the benefits that that brings is well known for millennia, really, in many ways. And I suppose there's, you know, people in services, for disability service, mental health service, that kind of thing, have used and engaged in, you know, in animal husbandry, plant husbandry, and that for its benefits for many years. So I suppose there's nothing new in that. But in more recent times, many hospitals had farms associated with them, people worked there.
In fact, the Dundrum Central Mental Hospital has a very, very big farm there as well.
Yeah.
Piemont, where there are some people with intellectual disabilities, have a farm. And I think, as you say, people have great benefits from it. Even, I know the prisons as well, over the years,
definitely
farming. So yeah, as you say, it is a tried
and tested. There was also people taking advantage of, like, people who came out of orphanages, went onto farms and were taken advantage of for cheap labour and that kind of thing. So there's a long history of good and bad in that in the past, right across the world, not just in Ireland. So I suppose looking at the good side of that, there was a practice in Europe going on for, you know, the last 20, 30 years, whereby individual farms and farm families were providing support to individuals in their own community. So we came across that, along with UCD, and they got involved. UCD got involved particularly with the Department of Agriculture there and Rural Development with a research project in Europe in about 2007. And our background here in Leitrim was that we have delivered social inclusion programs here in Leitrim, as have all the local development companies around the country, the partnerships, local development companies. And we'd be dealing with a lot of people with, you know, the various target groups of people who are excluded socially, culturally, economically, etc. And health exclusion is a part of that for many. So we saw, and my role at that time was working with small farmers because their income is very low. They have, you know, some of them left school early with no educational attainment and that kind of thing. So they needed as much support and inclusion in some ways. So we were marrying the two in a way because many of these farms are family farms. They have great assets. They're very connected to the community. You know, those farms are part of a community. There's much wider activity than just the farming. They're, you know, many of those families would be volunteering, involved in all sorts of things. Their assets, you know, the farm assets are there. They may not be producing, you know, very commercially producing in terms of agriculture, but the assets that are there are enormous, and within the people. And many of those families we would have found, you know, would have experience, either a member, family member working in services, mental health service, disability service, or have family members who needed support in those ways. So it has only really made sense to bring the two together. And what we've found since we started this initiative, say, with that research in 2007 with UCD, we became involved then in a funded project which was cross-border, and that was in the six counties in Northern Ireland, the six border counties. And we actually put in place practice with 20 farmers. There was 74, 75 people went out onto those farms for 30 weeks. And we measured the benefits to everybody, the farmers, the services, and the individuals in particular. So that's where it's come from.
What were the, without getting into statistics and percentages, was it overwhelmingly positive for those people who went both on both sides of it?
Absolutely. Like, those, the placements on farms are person-centred, focused on the goals and personal goals of the people that are going out. So they can vary hugely depending on the person's situation in life, their needs, where they're going, where the recovery is going, what their goals and what they want to create a good life for themselves, really, because everybody is so different. And of course, every farm is so different. We saw huge differences. Farm is too big or too small.
I'm interested because one of the things and I've noticed you're saying is it's almost like an equal benefits for the farmer and the person who's the client as such of the social services who's gone to that. Have you gone from somebody who's started this a skeptical farmer to somebody who's now a convert in some ways? Has that happened? Have you seen that epiphany?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about the benefits for farmers and their rural community, because inclusion, you know, in the mental health side in particular, we see, you know, stigma is a major issue. And, you know, when people are involved in just ordinary activities in the ordinary community, in ordinary things that are, and like farming and the tending of animals and plants, and it's not just in farms, it's in horticultural production. They're so regular, ordinary. Those plants require care regardless of what happens. You know, it's a constantly changing environment, like somebody's recovery. You have good days, bad days, you have wet days, cold days. And it gives people resilience, and it helps them build that resilience. And both the farmers, like, we see farmers are very, you know, under a lot of pressure themselves. And Chagas have recently released a booklet to help farmers with their own mental health. And social farming is included as one element of that, because there's dual benefits. They can be helping and supporting somebody in their community, whatever their needs, and also helping with their own isolation and maybe more activity.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that. Do you find that there's an element that becomes a socialization for both the client, from your client's point of view, where they might end up going to the mart or going to the co-op, being on the back of the tractor?
Absolutely.
And because, you know, having some rural family members as well, it's very hard to make it up the road without stopping for a chat with somebody.
Absolutely. I mean, we found social benefits hugely, you know. The social benefits alone allow people to become, you know, in a space that they can become comfortable, and then they, you know, they can come out of themselves and become part of something wider at their own pace, because you don't necessarily have to come off the farm the first day, and it can be gradual as people choose or at the speed they want. And certainly those social occasions, like, farmers are involved in all sorts of things, like the vintage machinery, the agricultural shows. You know, they're going down to the local market. They're very social occasions, many of them, and a wide variety, even just going down to the stores to pick up some animal feed or supplies or whatever. Even visitors to the farm, like the vet, the, you know, the agricultural department staff, whoever comes to the farms. So there's a lot of things happening, and this is what we, you know, these are the latent assets within the farm that are so ordinary, but they can have such huge benefits with people that go out there.
Did you find yourself at the Ploughing Championship this year?
Yeah, we were. We have attended the Ploughing Championship and the Balmoral Show, in fact, to talk about the in Belfast, to talk about social farming and to encourage farmers to see and understand what it is and to see if they're interested in getting involved. We're delivering the project for the Department of Agriculture. We have partnered with the Waterford Leader Partnership, with Southwest Mayo Development Company, and with West Limerick Resources. And we are encouraging farmers nationally, and also working with service providers, and not just in the mental health and disability service, but in where people have other needs, say, in terms of long-term unemployed people, with the youth services, with refugees, in fact, with the justice system, the justice service, probation and justice. Because there are people with all sorts of needs, not just...
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, Brian, because, you know, I've having covered some of these topics over the years on this radio station for Mental Health Week as well, former prisoners have a particular set of challenges to overcome, depending obviously how long they've been in prison or what their mental health condition is at that stage, but also they will suffer prejudice and people will be wary of having ex-prisoners for whatever their crime might be on the farm. How do you break down those barriers for people?
Well, it's very similar, you know, I suppose when people go onto a farm, obviously we do quite a bit of work with farmers, gearing them up, understanding the needs of people. There's a person-centered approach. So if we do engage with a service, there's quite a bit of discussion to ensure that everybody knows, you know, what happens if something goes wrong or if something needs somebody needs more additional support, whatever. Sorry. In other European countries, there's quite a bit of support provided by social farms and care farms or green care, whatever they call it, in different countries, to people in the justice system. We've had a few people who benefited but came through other services to start with. But we have engaged and are engaging with the probation service. It's very similar. I mean, the approach is a person-centred focus on supporting people's recovery and engagement and inclusion and whatever it is a farm and a social farm or horticulture unit can provide, a place where people can take a placement and then progress whatever their goals might be.
Brian, what's your background? What's your professional degree?
I've a background in agricultural science, and as I said, working in social inclusion here in Leitrim. I also have a family member with disability and fairly closely involved with the intellectual disability advocacy, even at a national level with Down Syndrome Ireland.
Because I'm getting the impression, and I know this is a talk about the initiative itself, but just from listening to you, not to say that you're a convert, but that you're very passionate about this.
Absolutely. I think anybody that gets involved in this kind of thing, in developing initiatives like these, I suppose it's innovative, and it can be hard to find a home or a space because, you know, you're operating across agriculture and health services and the various service providers within that. So it's very hard to find a home. You have to win people over.
Yeah.
You have a lot of communication to get across the messages of what this can do. And, you know, there's a lot of barriers to overcome. Like we had, people said, oh, you'll never put people with disabilities or that out onto a farm. It won't be safe. There won't be safeguarded. They could be taken advantage of. And to get through all those things, to get insurance, in fact, first initially was, and still is, a challenge. Because obviously farmers have to increase their insurance cover. They have to be very focused on health and safety. And obviously safeguarding vulnerable people is a very important thing nowadays. Health and safety are looking into services and coming up with all sorts of things. So it has to be assured to a level that that people are safe, properly safeguarded.
How do you reassure people that it's, I know it's not, but how do you reassure people that it's not a cheap labour scheme?
Well, absolutely. We are very clear that it's not a labour intervention. People aren't going out for work placements. While the activity that goes on the farm is important and engaging in that activity, but if somebody wants to improve well-being, weight loss may be part of that. And so, you know, on a farm in a natural way, farmers are quite fit. And, you know, many of the feedback we would see from service providers and the people who go out, weight loss, physical activity improves. Yeah. And it's just by doing something else, not focusing on it. And those things can improve well-being in their own. Yeah. Without being hugely focused on them. Just being out, active, moving. And that's what there's no magic in social farming, but in some ways, when we see and hear the benefits, you think, well, there is some sort of magic there.
I never thought about weight loss and things like that, because when you're working at the countryside as well, there's no takeaways around, so there's probably having a reasonably...
And you're out in the fresh air.
Bread.
Yeah, you're out in the fresh air. There's no... You know, we're all very focused on technology nowadays, you know, we get away from the fact that we are associated intrinsically. Humans are intrinsically focused on, you know, the rhythms of the seasons, the rhythms of day and night, the rhythm of new life in spring, birth, and it all appears in its raw, naked sort of beauty on the farm between spring, autumn, and winter. And you see, you know, the whole of life unfold on the farm in any one year.
And Brian,
that's a grounding thing, and really gives people a focus and perspective that they can. branding, that's a grounding thing, and really gives people a focus and perspective that they can use and help in their making produce at this time of year into the kitchen when it's raining and cooking. It can be develop an interest in photography. Some people are interested in machinery. Some people are interested in the horticulture side and take up, you know, and take up growing food. So there's all sorts of things on farms to capture somebody's interest and move them in a direction that they may not have understood or known, and real interests we've seen come out of it.
And Brian, just one more question before we let you go. Have any of the people who've been involved found full-time work out of this or part-time work and decided that this is going to be their future?
Yeah, we see some people, in fact, recently when we launched this project with the Department of Agriculture, we were on Ireland AM, and one of the people there with us was John Murphy, who's based in County Cavan. He's now working in, under an employability program and getting paid through that after many years in hospital. And he's very happy working on that farm 3 days a week. And, you know, his life has changed by the placement he had on that farm that's down in Moran's farm in there. So yes, some people want to progress towards work. Some people want to progress towards work off the farm in other areas. They just want to rebuild work routines and that kind of thing. Other people do, and in the case of John, he'd never worked on a farm before, but never really been on a farm except a relative. He's from Dublin originally. So he is now working 3 days a week and really happy in doing that on that farm. It's an organic farm there in Mount Nugent.
Well, John.
So yes, the answer. But the placement is so focused on personal goals, it varies hugely. And some people, yes, their focus is on returning to work at some point, and it can certainly help with that.
Brian, if people want to know more about this, if there's somebody listening who knows a farmer, a farmer's listening as well, or a possible client, where would they get more details on this?
Well, I'd say... The simplest and easiest way is to Google social farming, and you will turn up at our website. It's www.socialfarmingacrossborders.org. But if you Google social farming, you will come up with social farming, and we're in the process of reshaping that website, but all that information is there, and you can contact us here in the Leitrim Development Company, or in our sister local development companies in South West Mayo Development Company, West Limerick Resources, Waterford Leitrim Partnership, or you can get us here at you can get Helen here at 086-790-5596 or Helen at ldco.ie.
So if we can't find you with all those addresses, then
yeah, all that information is on the web. If you Google social farming, if you turn up.
Brian, you've been a pleasure to talk to. Thank you so much, and thanks for your passion
you
on this as well. I have to say, I wasn't sure about this item when we looked at it today. I thought, oh, that's interesting, but you've really brought it to life, and your passion for it really comes across. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talking to Brian Smith there on social farming this morning here on Walk in My Shoes FM. If you want to contact us, we're on Twitter at Walk in My Shoes. You can send a carrier pigeon. You'll find us again, walkinmyshoes.ie. All the details, contact details are there. We're going to be talking to Melda McHugh in just a few minutes' time from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services about addiction and mental health all mixed into one. So we're going to look forward to that chat. But let's have one of my favourite tracks from Girls Aloud. It's called Call the Shots.
With the right support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01 249 3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
For World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio.
Sally Murray is telling everybody you don't know love. Liz, do you know love? Delphine, do you know love?
Yes,
I do. Yes. Oh, she does. Ooh, Rachel? No! You can reach Rachel on her Twitter or her Tinder profile. Now it's Walk In My Shoes Radio. This is Shea Byrne here till 11 o'clock. It's heading for great music in as well. Some of the tracks I've never heard, so I'm looking forward to hearing those. I get to pick the music this year, but should listen, it's an education. Ali Murray's I Know Love. Now, I'm joined by Imelda McHugh, who's an addictions dual diagnosis coordinator. That sounds very grand.
It does, doesn't it?
And a bit confusing.
Completely.
So you've been here for more, like Harry Moore in Dawson Street, for more years than I care to remember, Imelda. Just tell us, first of all, tell us a little bit about you. What's your background?
No problem. My name is Imelda McHugh. My role at the moment is as addiction and dual diagnosis services manager. I was nursing here for years, for quite some time, and then I went on and did counselling and psychotherapy.
Were you a general nurse or were you in mental health?
Both. I have general nursing and mental health nursing. But I was here as a nurse for many years, and then, as I said, I went off and did counselling and psychotherapy. And the area that I specifically leaned towards was addiction right the way through my counselling psychotherapy time. So with that in mind, and through changes that happened here in the hospital, within the organisation, around 2010, I became the addictions coordinator. So is the service coordinator as well as the manager for the counsellors and psychotherapists. So that really is where I'm at.
So services means the actual...
addiction service plus the dual diagnosis service.
But you're in charge of what the programs that happen here.
Absolutely.
So people come in, people will be familiar with the people who are working for you.
Absolutely.
So you have counsellors and you have various...
Absolutely.
So you're the boss.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't like to call myself the boss. But you know what? Because we work as a team. And teams work really, really well.
Yeah. You know, a camel is something designed by committee, so...
Teams work well, Shay. I'll stick with that one.
I can feel I'm being psychoanalyzed, psychotherapy.
That's all right. I'm not on duty this morning.
Why do you think that you personally had an interest in the addiction side of things? What happened over the years, maybe here or elsewhere, that made you interested in that?
Okay, well, I suppose nowhere is exempt, for starters. There is no family in Ireland that probably hasn't met in some form the area of addiction, albeit and maybe not quite as in, you know, latter stages, but certainly where alcohol or drug use or indeed gambling has been part and parcel of their lives. So for that in mind, it was something that, you know, in the cusp of the change that has happened in the era of Ireland by the economy and everything else, that hasn't gone away by no means, and I don't believe it ever will. So obviously people were coming in for treatment, which is fantastic, and that's what we have an open door policy to, but there's a bigger picture in anybody who is in addiction. And it is society, it is workforces, it is communities, and most importantly, it's family members who are living with that addiction. Addiction, by its very nature, stretches out to a much wider force, and indeed, very often leaves an enormous trail of destruction in consequence to how somebody it manifests over the years. That was a huge area for me. I saw family members many, many times sit opposite me. And when I tell you that I have been humbled on more than one occasion by somebody's story who has told me things like they have gone beyond the call of human sometimes in their strive to actually do something for their loved one, help their loved one, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That really is the truth. And their desperation and their frustration and all the other things that goes with living with addiction, don't ever forget that they are seeing it through sober eyes. So the behavioural chain of somebody's destructive as a loved one, the person that is living with that lives with it all. The person who is in addiction is in addiction. Really feeling, seeing, you know, they're not cognizant in what's going on around them. So you can appreciate, I suppose, a family member, and particularly females in this, who are married to somebody who inevitably they're looking for a partner in the relationship for finance, for the rearing of children, the normal everyday life that has to happen. They feel very let down over the years because, of course, the person in addiction is not there.
But you're sitting there 20 years ago or 27 Absolutely, years ago yeah. as a general nurse, as a mental health nurse, yeah. Did something click in you and say, I want to do more than this particular role I'm in. I want to expand that role. Is that what inspired you to go back and study counselling, psychotherapy?
I think when you're nursing, you're all about fixing problems, and that's exactly what our job is as a nurse. We care and we treat and we do all those things. But we were inevitably fixing. So somebody with a broken leg, we knew exactly what to do. We did their dressings, we did the surgery, we did the post-op, we did all the things that we're fixing. We never really looked from the neck up, to be honest with you. Because, you know, we spoke to people, of course, but we were more keen on the actual fixing, so the actually statutory thing of doing. Counselling and psychotherapy is much more about the person in front of you actually being the expert. And guiding that and being able to, maybe in the process, literally walk the journey with them. Because people have huge resources, major resources already in there. They feel They haven't by the time they arrive to us because they're exhausted. But there are people that are out there absolutely every day putting one foot in front of the other. And hats off to anybody who's actually doing it. We don't give half enough credit, I suppose, to the person that is in huge struggles and still manages to maintain as much as possible that they can. We don't hear those stories, of course. We hear the complete opposite. But when you see somebody having gone through the journey and you see the difference in somebody who has walked in on the first day to the person that walks out on maybe your last session or indeed, you know, in time or whatever else, it is unbelievable what you get from that. And you've done very little. You've listened, you've actively listened, but the most important thing of all, you've actually given back what was already there. And I think that that is, in the relationship that is absolutely done in counselling and psychotherapy, nothing will ever compete with that. Because it is the changing point.
So talk to me about dual diagnosis then. Somebody comes in, let's say, with an alcohol addiction.
Absolutely.
Compulsive behaviour is compulsive behaviour, whatever way it manifests itself, whether it be gambling or whether it be drugs or whether it be sex or whatever reason you might manifest. And you say there might be a dual diagnosis. Can you give me an example of that?
Absolutely. Dual diagnosis simply means, in simple terms, it's somebody with a comorbidity diagnosis. In other words, somebody with maybe an addiction plus a mental health disorder. It could be an eating disorder plus an addiction, it could be, but it's a dual diagnosis. Somebody at that point has to absolutely manage both. And that's what we're very lucky here. We have a dual diagnosis, full program, full service in-house here, which is very, very brilliant when you hear the stories that are outside, because it's not really... Somebody with an addiction goes with an addiction to a mental health area. The door is kind of shut to them because people deal with just one thing.
So they deal with the addiction and the compulsive behaviour. But if I have bipolar...
Blur, absolutely. Okay. There's no guarantee that you're going to get through that door. So dual diagnosis is very much out there. We absolutely do know that it's there. The stats are coming through loud and clear to us, and our program is extremely busy here all the time.
You talk a lot about family members. Do you have something for family members as well? I know in the outside world, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, and then there's Al-Anon.
That's right.
And Al-Ateen.
Absolutely.
And there's various facilities and narcotics as well. Do you do something for family members here?
Absolutely. We advocate all of those that you've just said, Shay. All voluntary groups that are outside or whatever, we completely and utterly advocate for them here, and we actually invite them in to our services here, and they do a lot of volunteer work for us. We have what's known as the CRAFT program here in St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. CRAFT stands for Community Reinforcement and Family Training. It is a bespoke model for family members living with addiction. It is completely and utterly non-confrontational, the most respectful way of working with a family member, because, as I said to you already, when a family member appears to us, they are broken. They are completely broken because they have literally put stick and plasters on things every single day in chaotic times and lifestyles. They hold the responsibility of so much that they have, in all of that, have lost their own sense of worth on several elements. The other thing that that CRAFT absolutely does is empower the person. That is primarily what CRAFT teaches. And we as therapists teach those skills in a very systematic way. CRAFT does a lot more. We actually ask them to almost turn 360 in the way that they help their family member, because they've done everything else. They've told us that. They've told us they've nagged, they've pleaded. They have literally...
When you talk about resilience, the stories I've heard because of family members as well, where, let's just say, there's money taken because somebody needs money for gambling or money for drugs or money for alcohol.
For sure.
And it's taken from the most vulnerable relative that you have.
Completely.
And everybody's outraged. And they take them back. They take back that person.
Absolutely.
And then they do it again.
That's right.
And they take that person back again.
That's
and
right.
They are utterly broken by that.
That's
I
right.
mean, utterly.
Broken.
Their faith in humanity is gone. Their faith in love and family members is gone as well. So you treat them as well. You're bringing them in and trying to rebuild that trust in them.
Completely. Because the one thing that family members have told me, Shay, they know the person before the addiction. And that's what they are literally hooked into. They know the love and the person and everything about that individual way before addiction took hold. So why wouldn't we work with the family member that knows that amount of information and knows what the... So in other words, separating almost the individual from the addiction. And family members don't give up too easily. They, as I said to you, I've heard the stories. Rock bottom, I don't know what that's all about. Because I have yet to meet a person parallel with another person that has given me the same rock bottom. I believe it's mythical. I don't believe it's out there at all. Because I have heard rock bottom stories and people have continued to drink and use and gamble and do whatever. So I do not know what rock bottom is. Family members sometimes believe that this rock bottom has to happen and that there will be a sudden change in somebody.
An epiphany almost.
An epiphany. I've yet to find it in my 27 years. Some may think about it, but I do think that as a family unit to work, we know that bringing in somebody and somebody accessing our service here for the addiction or indeed the dual diagnosis, that's a one part of the picture. We know that they have to go back to family members, they need to go back to their work, they need to go back to whatever, normal everyday life. Why wouldn't we include those people, or indeed say, that are going to be their reinforcers, probably to stay sober?
Just one thing you mentioned as well, and I picked up on it there earlier, and I'm not asking you to give national statistics or international statistics. Do you find that most of the people coming through here with addiction issues are men?
Yes is the answer.
That's just anecdotally. I'm not asking you for evidence about that. I'm just...
Yes is the answer. However, I will tell you that females are very much on the increase. Home drinking has been part and parcel of that for that increase. And of course, we're never going to get the stats on that.
So home drinking and internet gambling,
the availability.
And I'm not asking you to comment on this again.
Yeah.
If you watch any of the satellite channels during the day, daytime, you will see these glamorous ads for online bingo. Here's €10 to start and off you go.
Absolutely.
You'll have a great time, glamorous lifestyle. And the reality is there's somebody sitting at home with an iPad.
Absolutely.
With a credit card with money they don't have and gambling. I mean, you must have seen that.
Completely. And I'm really glad that you said that, because 9 times out of 10, the destructive nature of an addiction with alcohol or with drugs will inevitably manifest itself in some way, a physical way.
You either fall down.
Correct. Or it's visual. People will see somebody under the influence. They will see they're not up to the mark, and when they're working, life was done. Or maybe coming into work really quite dishevelled, you know. So as I said, it's the visual. You can see that. The public will see that. Gambling, a much more hidden addiction. And unfortunately, to some degree, the physical manifestation is never seen. Because why would you? The person looks bolt upright. They're totally having this conversation with you. They're turning into work. There's as much going on in their addictive life under the radar. And unfortunately, by the time it actually comes to, like, it can be almost the end of the road.
What I want to get, and what I get from you as well, is a message of hope here.
Completely.
This is not the end of the road. This is not something that people can overcome this.
Completely.
Whether by accessing this service. Is there access to the Dean Clinics as well?
Dean Clinics is absolutely, but the CRAFT program is very simple to get in touch with. If you ring our support and information line here, you can ask for anybody in the addiction service to be put through to, and we can talk through CRAFT with you. There's no assessment, referral, nothing like that. Really, all we want to have is a conversation with you. It's an 8-week program. We run it here on a Thursday evening by 2 addiction therapists. I brought this in 2015, Shay, and when I tell you that the results in that short length of time have been phenomenal, I really mean that.
It's €50 a week. If you can't afford that...
There are other options, and there are probably other groups going on in the community, which there are, that maybe people will have to...
But the first thing is you need to look for help, and then once you find your way through the helpline here, people here will do their best, no matter what your circumstances or your location in the country. we'll try to help you.
Absolutely.
Here.
That's the key thing. Family members that are listening this morning and thinking, you know, this is me. This is where I'm at. I want to say to them, hand on heart, please don't feel in isolation and alone, because the only way that this is going to get better is to lift that phone and access for the first time ever and tell it as it is for you.
You're not going to be shocked by anything you hear.
Not
after 27 years.
I mean it. Not at all. The great news is that people think that they shock me, I suppose, to some degree.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stories are very similar when it comes to it. The core story remains exact. But there, as I said, there is help. There definitely is somebody ready to listen to your story. And I can guarantee your life will improve. And there's not many guarantees.
There's not many guarantees, yeah.
But I can guarantee you,
do
this craft program, your life, because that's one thing that craft has actually taught us. There, yes, of course, it's for the service user, but primarily you can actually get a good functioning for yourself.
Imelda McHugh, the Addictions and Dual Diagnosis Coordinator. Is another Dual Diagnosis Coordinator, Robert Gill,
The one. He's on his way. Robert is coming in to you in the afternoon.
He's going to be here. He's going to be talking to Nuala Carey around 4:30. So we look forward to that. About addiction and cyber world.
There you are.
Oh, listen, I just mentioned it
there. It's all happening.
It pains me to see those ads on the television.
Absolutely.
It really does, because I know what they're doing. I know that's an insidious thing. You're sitting at home, three children screaming. You're on your own. Mostly women, I have.